FM.
Ooh, the essay premier. Coming on the show to face our questions. Look out, premier, because they're really coming in. It's Peter Malinowskis on SAFM. Peter Malinowskis. Peter Malinowskis.
Good morning, premier. Are you enjoying that tune still?
Yeah, I'm getting used to it, Beck. It's all right. Good.
And the Premier of South Australia back in charge after 793 days under an emergency management plan, which meant that the police commissioner was running the state. How will we notice that in our day-to-day lives?
Look, I think the big deal here, Beck, is it gives business confidence that at any moment, on any second, they could find out that they could potentially have to close their doors because of a change in the pandemic. So we're in a situation now that the emergency management declaration is lifted. We've made some changes to the Public Health Act, which means the baseline restrictions we still have in place, which are, you know, you have to wear a mask if you go into a hospital, for instance, that we retain. But from here, restrictions can't go up. They can only go down unless we have some significant, you know, new variant come along that causes a lot of concern. But outside of that, then what we see is sort of another big step towards systems normal, which is a good thing for confidence, if nothing else.
Well, I think it's a fantastic thing. And I was very shocked to learn when you became Premier and you told us that how the structure sort of worked. And I believe that the Premier should be in charge of the state. And I think that's what you've now got. So I think it's a great thing for SA.
Yeah, look, Grant Stevens has done an amazing job, Cozzy. I don't think we should take anything away from him.
Yeah.
And even Stephen Marshall, like at Nicola Spirier, during the depths of the pandemic, there were some big calls to make, and the Emergency Management Act allowed that to happen. But once that declaration came into effect 793 days ago, it really did shift an extraordinary amount of power and responsibility into the hands of Grant Stevens, which I think he's handled well. But we're now at a point where that doesn't seem necessary any longer, and the Commissioner and I have been working closely about how we navigate our way through this. We made some changes to the Public Health Act, which allowed us to do it, and now we're in a good spot. And, you know, I just can't thank him enough for his service to the state.
And what are the current mask rules now? Everyone's a little bit confused. And Beck and Cozzy still insist that I wear one in the studio. Yeah. They say they're the rules.
That's been pre-COVID, mate.
It's just that dirty mo. I just don't want to see the mo first thing in the morning.
I think the mo looks all right, Lee, mate. So,
thank you.
So basically now you only have to wear masks in high-risk settings. So the best examples of that are in aged care centres, in hospitals and the like. There is still a requirement on public transport, and that'll be something we continue to monitor. But yesterday what we did was we announced that we're lifting the mask requirement in high school. So there may be instances where some schools still keep it, and that's if there's an outbreak in a particular school. But the broad-based, the broad-scale mask mandate in schools has been lifted. And I think that's going to provide a lot of relief to, you know, teachers and students alike.
Yeah. I feel like if I was in high school and I had a pimple, I'd be so grateful for the mask. I'd be like, oh, my God, I've got the worst zit on my chin today. Thank God for the mask.
Absolutely. Yeah, my cold sore breakout in year 10 would have been protected had we have had COVID back then.
Still part of it.
Premier, on to other matters, and I'm sure you're well across this, but we're seeing staff shortages in the state. From small businesses, tiny cafes, all the way through to big construction companies. They just can't get staff. How do we solve this problem?
Firstly, great problem to have that unemployment's so low, hey?
Yeah, we're approaching full employment. So that's like you said, because it's a better problem to have than the opposite. But when you start to see, you know, a lack of access to labour, particularly skilled labour, becoming a constraint to growth, you can't help but feel like it's a missed opportunity. So I do think skill migration is part of the equation, but really the best thing we can be doing is investing as hard as we possibly can in the next generation of workers to make sure they've got all the skills that will give them a decent standard of living and allow our economy to be more productive on the back of labour productivity. Now, the problem there is it's a long-term proposition, right? Because we can make changes in education, invest in early childhood education, restructure universities, but that doesn't help the cafe owner tomorrow. So I guess I went to the election with a long-term agenda and rather than just that short-term sugar hit type policy. And I just hope that South Australians are willing to back us in on that journey. In the short term, though, acknowledging the problem, one of the first meetings I'll be having is with the new Home Affairs Minister, which is the Immigration Minister, to see what I can get out of the federal government to see South Australia get access to skilled migration in the pockets where it's needed most. But the long term has to be investing in our kids our workers to ensure they've got the skills that are required for a good standard of living.
Because if you bring in a whole bunch of new people to fill these jobs, then that also puts further pressure on, say, like the healthcare system, which is already struggling. So it's a bit of a tough one for you.
Bingo.
Oh, because he loves infrastructure chat.
I do. I do.
Yeah, but he's right. I mean,
oh, don't tell him that. That's
all we needed. No. But
I think, and I don't want to speak for Cozzy, we would share common aspiration about having a growing population, but you've got to do it in a way that is in conjunction with the investment in services to accommodate it, right? So, and that's why, you know, you need to have a strategy around not just the health system, but the education system, roads, public transport. And that's about getting ahead of the game. What normally we do is we boom the population in an area and then we try and work out how we fix the road after the fact, when it should be the other way around. And we're starting to do some planning in that regard.
Hey, just quickly, who are the, like, what do we say, unemployment's like, you know, 4% or whatever it is. Like, who are the 4% left that are unemployed? Are they ones that either don't want to work or physically can't work? Like, who are they? Like,
yeah, that's a really important question. So the unemployment in South Australia is 4.5%. You're on fire.
Oh, you're just showing off now. Yeah. Oh, I know the unemployment rate.
It's really important. So the people who are unemployed are those that are actively looking for work and can't find it. That's the 4.5%. But in actual fact, in South Australia, we've got a relatively low participation rate. So around about 37% of working age people aren't even looking for work. Now, they're people that can't. You know, they might have an injury or an illness or a condition that prevents them from doing so, or they've made an active choice to not look for work. But the 4.5% are those people that are looking for it and can't find it. Now, that seems like a bit of a misnomer given there's so much work out there at the moment, which is where the training and skills question comes in as well.
Very interesting. Hey, mate, before we let you go, I want to talk to you about Stobie polls. What would you like to say to the Stobie polls of South Australia? Now, bear in mind, we had a state election where they held on to core flutes for a very long period of time. Then we had the federal election. So the Stobie polls in South Australia were asked to yet again step up to the plate. Finally, after Come this on. Long period, they get freedom. What would you like to say to them?
They are the silent heroes of our democracy. They are always underestimated. I mean, I find myself guilty of driving past them and just ignoring them without paying homage.
Yeah.
But they are the silent heroes of our democracy. And I know a lot of people want to get rid of core flutes, but isn't it sort of part of our democratic ritual? It sort of reminds people, God, here's an election. So, but they're underrated. I've climbed up a few in my days putting up those posters, and pulling them down is worse than putting them up, depending on the outcome. So,
when you put your own up, do you go, oh, look at that handsome devil. Look at him.
I haven't put any of my own up.
Have you ever got to the top of that ladder, mate, and put one of your own up and done a cheeky selfie? Because I would have. I would have definitely.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
Hey, mate, thanks so much for your time, mate. Have a great day, and we'll catch you around the traps.
All right, thanks, guys. Back, Cozzy and Lebo. SAFM.